You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Braves Dugout Podcast. Here we are with another episode. Unfortunately, Spencer Strider went down with an injury. So today, we're going to talk about that injury and what it means for the Braves. Obviously, with him being the ace of the squad, arguably, that means a lot. But we're going to dig into the intimate details and what the Braves can do and things like that. Thanks so much for joining the show. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back. Don't forget to like and share, give a 5-star rating on Apple, all that jazz. You know, it really helps the show out, as we all know, as you hear on every single podcast. People say that, and they say that because it's true. It helps the podcast get out to people that don't know it exists yet, possibly. And it's been doing wonders for the show, so I really appreciate all the help in that regard. It's been fantastic. The Facebook page has been growing like absolute crazy, and it's all because of you guys, and I really, really do appreciate it. So with that, I just wanted to take a second and say thank you. All right, so let's get into the episode. In Spencer Strider's last start, it was obvious that he didn't have his stuff going. He was getting knocked around. He had velocity drop off on his fastball. His slider wasn't moving like it normally does. And then we come to find out that he had UCL damage. And typically what that means, most of the time, is Tommy John surgery. At the time of this recording, it has not been announced that he needs Tommy John surgery. He's going to get a second opinion from a specialist to make sure, but what Mark Bowman is saying is that it really does look like it's going to be Tommy John surgery based on conversations he's had with Brian Snicker. Brian Snicker at this time has not said that he needs Tommy John surgery, only that it has not been confirmed that he does not need Tommy John surgery. So that's unfortunate. What that means is Spencer Strider, if he has surgery today, probably will not pitch again until halfway through next year. And this is his second Tommy John surgery. And as most of us probably know, the more Tommy John surgeries you have, the likelihood of you continuing to pitch is low. Now, we have seen guys like Johnny Venters come back after a third one, but he was a relief pitcher, played on a team, an Atlanta Braves team that was not good at the time. Whereas Spencer Strider was arguably the best pitcher on the Braves and one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball. So it's a little bit different. It's really unfortunate. The Braves just signed him to a really long contract. Of course, that covered a lot of his arbitration years, but still, it's unfortunate timing for everyone involved, for Spencer Strider, for Braves fans, for the checkbook, all of the above. It's a bad situation for everybody. It seems like the Braves can't catch a break. You know, every team deals with injuries. You know, if you go back and there are, like, if you can use different websites out there that track injuries, and it is interesting to look across the league. Very obvious that there's been an uptick in pitcher injuries. I mean, I remember last time I checked, don't quote me on this, but I believe as early as the injuries have almost doubled in the past 5 years as far as injuries to pitchers go. Of course, a lot goes into that. There's more pitchers pitching, so therefore the likelihood of more pitcher injuries is higher. That's true, yes, but it's much, much more than that. You know, MLBPA, the Major League Baseball Players Association, is saying it's the pitching clock. Major League Baseball is fighting back and saying there's not enough data to prove that. In my opinion, based on looking at the total number of injuries, more pitchers pitching, the average velocity, meaning how fast a pitcher has pitched, has gone up every single year. And if you look at the trends of, and I want to thank Brooke at Brooksgate on Twitter for this image. Go follow them. One of my favorite follows on Twitter right now. They put out great stuff. It's crazy, man. They joined Twitter like less than 6 months ago, and they've already got like 8,000 followers, and all they do is put out graphics and things like that. That's, to me, that's a sign of them doing a fantastic job. That's a really good follow on Twitter. But anyways, shameless plug for them. They didn't ask me to do that. I just really like the account. What they did is they showed a graph of the velocity going up and the number of injuries going up per year, and it's almost a perfect trend. That the average velocity went up across the league, that so did the number of injuries. So there's a lot of variables involved. Higher velocity, more spin rate. You know, there's been a higher focus on spin rate on pitches, and you know, the throwing in the pitch clock as well, and the number of pitchers that being higher than ever. You put in all those variables, and yes, it makes sense why more and more injuries are happening. It's also why you haven't seen the Braves put a ton of money in long-term deals for pitchers, because pitchers are much more likely to be injured than position players. And that's why you've seen teams like the Mets basically had to break things down, because they put so much money into pitchers like Max Scherzer and guys like that. It just, you know, Justin Verlander, it just doesn't make sense to put in all this money into pitchers, even if they're the best in the league. Jacob DeGrom is another one that, even though they're the best pitchers on the planet and some of the best pitchers of our generation, they're still, it's almost not if they get injured, it's when they get injured, and not what type of injury, but how bad the injury is going to be. Well, that didn't make any sense, but it's not a matter of like, hey, are they going to, you know, tweak something? It's only a matter of time before they have a major injury that's going to take them out for a long period of time. And so that's why the Braves, I think, haven't spent a lot of money on long-term contracts for pitchers. As you've seen with like Charlie Morton, that even though, of course, his age plays a factor, but they continue to do little two-year, one-year deals with options and things like that with pitchers. We saw it with Chris Sale. Chris Sale, believe it or not, is only 35 years old, so he's still got a few years left, and yet they gave him, you know, a two-year deal. And he, when healthy, is one of the best pitchers on the planet easily, especially when it comes to strikeouts. Spencer Strider got that long deal, but like I said, that's an anomaly, because as we've talked about contracts in the past, a lot of these long-term contracts like his, Ozzy Albies, Ronald Acuna, Michael Harris, guys like, you could even throw in Austin Riley in there. All those guys, their long-term contracts cover quite a few of their arbitration years. And remember, arbitration, you have, depending on if you're a Super 2 player or not, could have up to 4 years of arbitration. You have, you know, your first few years where you're under team control and you make league minimum. And then you get go into the arbitration process in year three. And then depending on your performance, you get paid. But the arbitration figures are extremely low. You could be the best player on the planet. And in arbitration year one, you're going to be severely underpaid. You're going to be making like $3 to $4 million, right? And the highest anyone's ever been paid in a single year for arbitration was in their third year of arbitration. And I think it was Juan Soto who had the highest ever. And I think it was around $27 million. But that was a year-by-year basis. So if he would have, you know, had a tragic injury, the team wouldn't be required to pay him the following year. That being said, you can see that these contracts are not the same as if you signed a free agent player once they hit free agency for 7 to 10 years or whatever, because you're going to have to pay that guy, you know, if they're good enough for a long-term contract like that, you're going to be paying them large amounts of money for 10 years, and it's going to be guaranteed for those 10 years. So even if that person has a career-ending injury, you're still going to have to pay that person, right? Whereas arbitration years, the risk is much lower. It's kind of like a, hey, we're going to pay you a little bit more to give you financial security, but also we are going to guarantee that in the last few years of your contract, you're going to be making a little bit less. So it's a gamble on both ends. I say all that to say, there's a reason, I believe, why the Braves have not given long-term contracts to free agent pitchers and a lot of their pre-free agent pitchers as well. I mean, we've seen that Max Fried, who's been, you know, a hero for the Atlanta Braves the past 5 years or so, they haven't given him that long-term contract yet. And a lot of that has to do with he's getting to free agency, and the risk is just so high right now with signing pitchers to long-term contracts. And Max Fried absolutely deserves a long-term contract, and a team probably will give it to him. So now that we've hit the doom and gloom of it all, that Spencer Strider is probably done for 15 months or so, that the Braves probably won't be signing Max Fried, why don't we take a little bit of a break, cheer up a little bit, come back and talk about some of the options that the Atlanta Braves have. Sound good? All right.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, welcome back from break. It is kind of interesting to say this, but we did get some good news on Spencer Strider in a sense that glass half full. After a second opinion, they are opting for the internal brace surgery, which, from my understanding, is a relatively new surgery on UCL injuries. I believe it's the one that Otani went through. And basically what that means is rather than, you know, with a second Tommy John surgery, you're looking at a recovery time of like 15 plus months. Whereas with the internal brace surgery, Strider will still be out for the remainder of the season, but the estimated time frame of return is actually only 6 to 7 months, which means since his injury happened so early this year, I guess again, glass half full, is that he should be good to go next season at the start of the season. Some people are saying maybe like May or June time frame. Some people believe it will be at the start of the season. Either way, it looks a heck of a lot better than it did at first, with it looking like he needed a second Tommy John surgery. I'm not a doctor. I don't know for certain, but it is interesting that this is a new type. It seems to be a new type of surgery on UCL tears, which could end up, I hope, replacing Tommy John surgery and be better for the players to be able to heal faster and not be as intrusive of a surgery. I don't know. I have no clue. But I'm hoping that that's the case. Best wishes to Spencer Strider, Otani, all the other guys. Shane Bieber, that, you know, he's going to have to go through Tommy John surgery. But all these guys that are having elbow injuries, you hate to see it. It's terrible for baseball. I know it's, you know, people say, well, they're making a lot of money to play a game and all that. But I don't ever want to be that way. You know, you never want to see guys get hurt. Just let the best players play and let's have the best product possible. With that, let's talk about guys that could possibly take Spencer Strider's place. There's a lot of options. Fortunately for the Braves, when it comes to the lower end of the rotation, they do have a ton of depth options. And it also shines light as to why it was such an excellent signing to bring in Ronaldo Lopez. You know, we can talk about guys. You can probably think of some guys right off the top of your head, just based off of last season, guys that could come up. But I kind of want to bring up how they're doing in AAA or options that could be brought in, you know. This also goes back to that I don't want to be like, that's what I told you so. But if you read my stuff on battery power, one of the things I did say, one article I wrote is, I wish they would have kept Marco Gonzalez. Marco Gonzalez did not have an elite year by any means, but he was better than any fifth starter they had last year. And I realized that they brought in Ronaldo Lopez to be the fifth starter, and Marco Gonzalez has been in the league long enough to where he'd have to have a Major League Baseball roster spot. He'd have to be on the 26-man roster. He could not be sent back down to AAA without being exposed to waivers. But, you know, it would have been cool to have him around, especially considering that right now for the Pirates, through three starts, he has a 2.65 ERA in 17 innings with 11 strikeouts and a 1.18 whip. And his Statcast, you know, it's showing that he got pretty lucky, but still, it would have been nice to have. He has an expected ERA of 5.22, so it's not a lead or anything like that, but it would have been nice to have him on the roster. I understand why it didn't happen, and right now we're just talking about basically coulda, shoulda, woulda, and at the end of the day, it wasn't that huge of a deal. So let's talk about stuff the Braves actually can do. We do know, obviously, that the Braves can make a trade. That probably won't happen anytime soon. What I mean by that is, if the Braves do decide to go that route, it'll probably be closer to the trade deadline. Just simply because any team that has a starting pitcher that they're willing to trade is going to wait until the trade deadline, while there's multiple teams that are looking for a starting pitcher, so that the bidding war would go up. And can the Braves compete with a team to bring in a starting pitcher, a rental starting pitcher? Is that something they really want to do? Do they want to bring in someone with multiple years of control? Do they even have the farm system to do that? Because what they'd be trading for a starting pitcher is other starting pitchers, most likely. You know, they do have Nacho Alvarez, who's looking really great, but, you know, Orlando Arcia, as well as he's doing, he's not on the team for very much longer, contractually speaking. So they, you know, I'm sure Orlando Arcia, the way he's been playing, is going to be seeking a much larger deal than he currently has. So do the Braves want to trade Nacho Alvarez? We'll get more information as we get closer to the trade deadline. There's guys out there like Paul Blackburn from the A's that makes sense for the Braves to bring in. There's plenty of guys that the Braves could bring in. There's guys at all different price points. You know, there could be cheap guys. Could they bring back Marco Gonzalez for basically nothing, depending on how the Pirates are doing? The Pirates are in first place right now. I don't think that they're not going to be in first place come trade deadline, but let's say hypothetically they were. They wouldn't trade Marco Gonzalez, but there are guys all over Major League Baseball that the Braves could trade for, but that's not going to happen anytime soon, not before closer to the trade deadline. So let's look at some of the other options that the Braves have. There are guys like A.J. Smith-Shawver, right? And Huascar Ulloa is pitching again. but both of those guys are struggling. You know, at the time of this recording, in two starts, has only 5 2/3 innings pitched with a 9.53 ERA, with 10 hits, 6 runs, 1 home run, 1 walk, 4 strikeouts, and a really ugly 1.941 walks and hits per inning pitched. Don't think we're going to see him pitching in the near future at the major league level. The Braves are still working on him, obviously, but that is a depth option, right? That's a good thing to have options. Braves' top prospect, A.J. Smith-Shawver, also struggling. 18 ERA, that's right, 1.800 ERA in two starts. He's only made it through 3 innings. He's given up 6 hits, 6 runs, 1 home run, 4 walks to only 6 strikeouts, and a 3.333 walks and hits per inning pitched. Of course, that is in a very small sample size of only 3 innings pitched, but it has not started off great, so obviously the Braves would probably not be bringing him up, right? At least not in the near future. We saw what happened with Allen Winans. I was really hoping that he would pan out. He has done extremely well over his minor league career. In fact, I believe he's one of the more underrated pitching prospects in the Braves system. Over his minor league career, he has a 2.83 ERA, and that's over 105 games, so it's not a small sample size. In the minor leagues, he's been very good at preventing runs, but when he makes it to the majors, he hasn't had very many starts. He's only had 7 games, right? 7 starts in 7 games with a 6.03 ERA. I understand why they threw him out there against the Mets. He's been doing well in the minors. And the first time he faced the Mets, he went 7 scoreless innings against them. But the second time he faced the Mets in the same month, he gave up 7 earned runs and only 4.1 innings pitched. And as we saw recently, he gave up 6 earned runs and 5 innings pitched. So the Mets, with 9.1 innings pitched against him or facing him, they scored 13 earned runs. So that really, really stinks for him. I hate that for him. I was rooting for him because very underrated prospect. He's been carving up the minor leagues for a very long time. And I was really hoping that things would pan out for him. I do think that he's good enough to be on some major league team. I just don't foresee him being the answer for the Braves rotation this year. I mean, after that performance with the Mets, it's going to be hard for them to throw him back up there. However, as we've seen in the past, the Braves do like to send players down and bring them back up throughout the year for spot starts, so we may not have seen the end of him. The three that are most likely to fill the role, and one who has already been called up, we'll start with who's already been called up. Darius Vines has already been called up, right? And he's been pretty good in his limited action this year so far. In two starts, he's had 12 innings pitched with a 3.75 ERA, which is actually a bit inflated if you ask me. He's given up 7 hits, 5 runs, 2 home runs, 3 walks to 11 strikeouts with a 0.83 walks and hits per inning pitch. If you have a 0.83 whip, you're going to be successful, period. The reason his ERA is a 3.75 is because he's given up 2 home runs in only 12 innings, but that's only 5 other hits, and he is barely walking anybody. He only gave up 3 walks to 11 strikeouts. If Darius Vines can keep this production up, that at the major league level, he'll do just fine. And we've seen in the past that he's done pretty well. For the major league club, he's made 5 appearances with 2 of them being starts. That's 20.1 innings pitched, and he had an ERA of 3.98, which is perfectly fine for a 5th starter. And remember, these guys are not coming up to take the number one spot from Spencer Strider. The order shifts to the left, and then they take the 5th spot is basically what's happening. Darius Vines, over his entire minor leagues career in 5 seasons, has a 3.57 ERA, right, which is over 345.1 innings pitched. So he's had a fairly large sample size, and he's done a decent job of preventing runs. Okay, so, and his whip is a 1.155. In his limited time in the majors, his whip was a 1.082. I'm looking at that whip, and I'm getting really excited. Okay, I think that if he can limit the walks and hits, he's going to be a great fifth starter. That's what you're looking for in a fifth starter. You're not looking for Spencer Strider-type strikeout stuff. You're looking at someone that limits walks and hits, and that's what he's been doing. So I'm really excited about that. I think that he can come in and fill the role really well this year, and I honestly wouldn't be shocked if they keep him for more than just five appearances this season. Next on the list is Bryce Elder. We all know him, all-star pitcher last year. His issue was that he fatigued, or either that or batters found him out, or both. It was a combination of both. You know, I've gone deep in depth on the Bryce Elder issue already, so we won't spend too much time on that. But so far, he's been doing pretty well in the minor leagues. In two starts, he's gone 10 and one-third innings with a 2.61 ERA and a 1.06 whip. That's by giving up 8 hits, 3 runs, 1 home run, 3 walks to 11 strikeouts. So his performance has been fairly close to Darius Vines, only he's given up a few more hits than Darius Vines has. But Bryce Elder, you know, he could definitely be an option in that fifth spot. He's shown that he's not a number 3 starter like we were hoping, but he could definitely fill that fifth role. No big deal. I'd be happy to see him back up in the fifth spot for sure. He's been showing that his demotion has not deterred him and that he's working hard and performing well in the minors so far. So I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Bryce Elder come back up. He might be the quote-unquote permanent answer this year, depending on, you know, if the Braves go with the trade or whatever. I would not be disappointed. And remember, when you have a fifth starter, my biggest issue with Bryce Elder, and it wasn't Bryce Elder personally, it was the handling of Bryce Elder last year. We knew in the second half that he was not a playoff or rotation guy. I realized that the rotation was depleted with Charlie Morton being injured, but still, that was not the guy you wanted to throw out there to pitch when they did. He shouldn't have made the playoff roster, in my opinion. But, you know, hindsight is 20/20. My point is that if you bring in Bryce Elder to be the fifth starter, that's fine. I mean, he would definitely be better than what they threw out as a fifth starter all year last year, and he would help them win games, and then when it comes to playoff time, they can make that decision there to see if he started to fatigue again or not. So I would not be disappointed if they brought Bryce Elder back up there. Another person is Dylan Dodd. You know, whenever he came up to the majors last year, he did not do fantastic. I'm sure many fans, when they think of Dylan Dodd, probably have a sour taste in their mouth. He had 7 starts last year for the Braves and had a 7.6 ERA. He's one of the big reasons why I did a whole thing on why the fifth starter in the Atlanta Braves last year was so terrible. One of the reasons why I wanted to bring Marco Gonzalez back, or keep Marco Gonzalez, rather, is that the Braves' fifth starter ERA was so bad last year. And Dylan Dodd was a large part of it, because in only 7 starts, he gave up 9 home runs with 12 walks. He had an ERA of 7.6, and his FIP, or fielding independent pitching, wasn't much better at 6.92, showing that it was largely his fault. His ERA plus was a 59, which means it was 41% below league average, and he had a whip of 1.893, and he only had an 3.9 strikeouts per 9 innings to 3.1 walks. So that's a strikeout to walk ratio of a 1.25. So if you look at his major league stats from just only 7 starts, they were really, really bad. But as we've seen with guys like Austin Riley, sometimes it takes a bit to develop, right? It's not as simple as draft. It's not like the NFL where you draft a guy and they're instantly making an impact. Very rarely does that happen. Very, very rarely in Major League Baseball. But Dylan Dodd has been doing great so far in his 2 games in the minor leagues. In 11 and 2/3 innings pitched, he has a 1.54 ERA with a 1.63 whip. Again, that whip is what scares me. He walks many guys. He has walked 7 guys so far That's his issue, is his control. He walks too many guys. But he hasn't given up any home runs, only two earned runs. But he has given up 12 hits. So Dylan Dodd, so far, has been a bit lucky, but he's preventing home runs. And the Braves could throw him up there as a spot start. I obviously would like Darius Fiennes or Bryce Elder up there. But all three of these guys have minor league options. The Braves can play the hot hand, if you will, if they want. Remember, though, that there's a new rule in place that a player can only be brought up and sent down three times in a year. So they're not going to go back and forth every other start with these three guys. They'll have to, you know, let them have a spurt of three or four starts here and there so they don't run out of their three times being able to send the guys up and down. Another option to think about is that Ian Anderson should be coming back soon. Ian Anderson has not been doing well, but he got injured last year early on. He only made one appearance in AAA, and he hasn't pitched again this year, so he'd need some ramp-up time for sure. But I don't want you guys to get excited as if we're going to get the Ian Anderson that we had when he pitched so well in the postseason a few years ago. Last year, or I should say his last time in the major leagues, he had 22 starts with a 5.08 ERA with a 1.513 whip, right? And he was walking way too many guys at 4.4 walks per 9 innings. Okay, so yeah, he's an option. That was in 111.2 innings pitched. He's good enough to be a fifth starter. Let me say it like that. Even with his 2022 performance, and if he can come back and pitch exactly like his 2022 performance, he would be good enough for a fifth starter. But we don't want him to be the guy like we were hoping he would be. So I just don't want to give, I just want to put some expectation management out there for when he comes back, if he comes back. It's going to be a Bryce Elder situation where he had a spurt of being really good, but in actuality, he was outperforming his metrics. And we're looking more like a fifth starter type role if he does come back. So just want to tamper your expectations a little bit. I hope nothing but the best for Ian Anderson. I'd love for him to come back and be exceptional. But we're looking at a fifth starter type. But he is an option once he comes back and is healed and is ready to go. So the Braves do have a ton of options for that fifth starter role. That's one thing they've done really good at, is they haven't had, you know, besides Spencer Strider, their drafts and stuff haven't brought in elite pitching talent, but they brought in a ton of pitching depth, which is really, really good to have, as we've seen with as many pitching injuries as we've had. All right, that's this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining again. Don't forget to join the Braves Country Cooking podcast feed, where Braves Dugout and Chatting Average is part of, and we'll be getting some new podcasts soon in the network, I'm sure, as well. Give that network a 5-star rating on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts, and share the show. You can follow the show at Braves Dugout Podcast on Twitter or Facebook, where the page has been blowing up like crazy. Love talking ball on Facebook. We've got a Facebook group, the Braves Dugout, Atlanta Braves Dugout Podcast Group, or the Atlanta Braves Dugout Facebook group. I love talking baseball with you all, so let's keep that up. You can email the show for any business inquiries at bravesdugout@gmail.com. We have a website, all that stuff. It'll be in the show notes. As always, see you next week, and go Braves.